All right, muscle. All right. It's all good. All right. All right, muscleheads, welcome to the fourth episode of the Super Muscle Cast, covering Kinnikuman Episode 4A, Flying Natsuko, and 4B, Part-Time Work is Tough. And you know what? Part-time work is tough. Don't know if we're going to keep that part in. It's not really a transition. But here is a transition. I'm T.G. Moxley, and I am joined once again by the man who needs no introduction. How's it going, Punch?
Oh, it's going pretty good. Unlike part-time work, you know, things haven't been too tough for me lately. So I'm excited to dive in and get started on another episode of Kinnikuman here.
Well, we start scene number one in a gyudon shop.
As we often do.
As we often do. A young woman with a white hat and a camera slung over her shoulder walks in and orders herself a large, declaring with a wink and a smile that she's always wanted to try gyudon. Now, I think right there that that's a pro move, just jumping in with the big before you try it for the first time. That's really believing in yourself that you're going to enjoy this meal.
Yeah, it's very bold. How ubiquitous is gyudon, I guess? That's the other thing. How plausible is it that someone as an adult would want to try gyudon? Is it a relatively obscure dish? Would it be like going and saying we wanted to try French fries, where it would be just absurd? Or is this something tethered to reality by some extent?
Well, that's a good question. I know that as far as these things go, it's considered to be kind of a cheap fast food sort of thing. I guess unlike ramen, I could see the idea that maybe someone hasn't tried it, although I'm not too familiar with these things myself. I can tell you that there are a number of popular restaurant chains in Japan that specialize in gyudon, Yoshinoya being the one that I've heard the most about, and the one that I've seen a few copycat recipes floating around the English language internet for anyone who wants to go for the most, let's call it authentic fast food experience gyudon possible. I know that the only gyudon I've ever tried is one that I made myself, and therefore I have nothing to judge it against in terms of authenticity, but I followed the recipe from just one cookbook on YouTube and found that to be rather tasty. And now I have some pre-made gyudon sauce in a bottle sort of gimmick that I bought from a specialty store and will eventually get around to trying and reporting on.
All right, well, I think that's a good plan, and you'll have to report back to us on what exactly comes of that, because I'm interested too. I don't think that I've had proper gyudon. I've had dishes with beef and rice and things in them, but I don't think that they quite qualify as gyudon. One thing I did note about this scene, and there's gonna be some stuff that's kind of awkward and uncomfortable, and I'll even use stronger language than that, wrong and offensive, in this episode. And we're starting with the idea, tethered in 1983 and not fully dissipated today, unfortunately, that it's somewhat surprising or alarming when women want to eat. So already we have our hero making fun of the poor woman for ordering a full-size gyudon, large, I guess it was, you know, in the shop.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's a little bit of inconsistency with the terminology, whether it's half-size and full-size or large and small. I know that in the manga they translate it as large and small. Here they seem to use large and half size as the two measures. But indeed, Kinnikuman initially snickers to Meat about the impropriety of a young lady having the appetite to attempt to eat a large gyudon, although when she actually engages him in conversation, he is quite, you know, complimentary and flattery and so forth, and his usual insincere self, I guess you could say. But yes, this is, I would say, the episode in which Kinnikuman is the most red-pilled and joker-fied, but luckily he doesn't seem to get rewarded for it at any point.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that in the 1980s, casual sexism wasn't really a disqualifying trait in heroes and protagonists. And I guess it's the same way in Japanese cartoons as it is in American movies and TV. So it's not great, but here we are.
Now she introduces herself to Kinnikuman by giving him her business card. She works for a magazine called Weekly Hero. And he reads her name as Wing Sheep Something Natsuko, which I believe is a joke at the expense of Kinnikuman's inability to read kanji. So I think that this is the sort of thing that kids who are in school and would be at the approximate age of, the demographic for this cartoon would be a probably more advanced reading level than Kinnikuman in kanji and could have a laugh at the Wing Sheep Something attempt to translate her name Tondoro Natsuko, meaning Flying Natsuko.
Yeah, I don't have much to add to that, and I'm filling space awkwardly.
Well, that's okay, because my goddamn cat is on my notes, and I don't know what's happening right now. So let's go to the mailbag. This week, we have two letters. It looks like, so far, the pattern has been 0 letters the first week, 2 letters the second week, 0 letters the third week, and 2 letters the fourth week, meaning that we are averaging 1 double letter every other week, which I think is pretty good. So letter one comes from Will Coldback in North Bay, Ontario. He asks, how come you don't do previews for the next episode at the end of the episode? Well, that's a pretty good question, Will. I think we'll start doing that. And in fact, here's a preview of this week's preview. Tune in next time to the Super Muscle Cast when we see Kinkotsuman do something for the first time.
We're going to get the show on the road here. We've had our first few Monster of the Week episodes. We've got some continuity going right now, but I think it's about time to kick it into gear a little bit and kind of get this story off the ground. We know what we're dealing with now.
And now we have a second letter. It's from Anonymous, and it says, one of the features that Weekly Hero magazine has is polls about which superhero is the most popular. Do you think that your show should have a poll as to which host is more popular, and why would it be the Punch King?
No, and I'm not sure.
Very good, very good. Well, I think that that definitively answers that. But yes, that is one of the little jokes that we find here. Kinnikuman is initially excited when Meat sees that he is ranked number one in the world in the Superheroes Weekly Hero magazine, and they celebrate and they put on little can-can outfits and they do a dance, and it's all very nice until Natsuko points out to them that actually he's number one on the worst list, which apparently is for unpopular heroes as well as monsters, because he bumped King Ghidorah off of first place.
Why do they even have that list?
I think it's just to be catty, you know? It was a different time.
I guess so.
But popularity polls are a common feature of Shonen Jump magazine, so there's a degree of magazine within a magazine in-jokery going on here, and as things go on, we'll find character popularity polls taking place in Kinnikuman that are conducted as actual shoots with audience members voting on their favorite characters. So we have that to look forward to in the future.
Oh-ho!
And it's always a little bit surprising, you know. I will find that sometimes the most popular heroes, I don't want to spoil things, but sometimes the most popular heroes are your recent villains. So we'll see a few examples of that coming up and talk more about the popularity polls as things go on.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I am now going to attempt to deadlift my gosh darn cat right off my notes. Come on, Banjo, you're not a character on this podcast. I'm sorry. Oh, Jesus! Oh, no!
Sounds like the fur's really flying over there.
I don't know how much of that made it onto the microphone, and I don't know how much of that to keep in. Don't fight a cat. Use your brain. Use drugs.
please don't the cat.
And continue if you can. Yes, indeed. But Natsuko proposes a feature on Kinnikuman called Clumsy Kinnikuman's Clumsy Clumsy Monster Patrol. What do you think of that? Is that a little too redundant, or is that about the right level for how Kinnikuman has been portrayed so far?
It's about the right level for how he's been portrayed so far, I think. He's going to get a little bit of shine in this episode of all things, which is kind of a weird development that he finally seems to find the monster that's just as pathetic as he is. But up until now, there have been flashes of him showing some degree of competence. When Kinnikuman was fighting against Sheik Seijin, he was possessed by the Yamato spirit and showed a surprising amount of competence there. So, he's not always terribly ineffective, just usually. So Clumsy Kinnikuman's Clumsy Clumsy Battles Against Monsters, or whatever the title was, is, you know, pretty accurate description so far.
And Natsuko tells Kinnikuman that if he wants a better title, then he can just be better and, you know, be best. So Kinnikuman says, oh, so what I need to do is do some cool stuff in my fights with monsters. Okay, I can do that. And they go out to the park looking for random encounters. But before they do, it's revealed through a wide shot that they've been overheard by a strange man in a trench coat. And then there's a brief close-up of his rocky face. But like I say, scene number two, Kinnikuman, Flying Natsuko, and Meat go walking in the park looking for random encounters with monsters. I love Kinnikuman's silly, high-stepping walk at the beginning of this sequence. He's just kicking his legs up like the Ministry of Silly Walks, and it's quite a nice bit of animation.
Yes, it is. I was wondering about that. It was kind of similar to the can-can dance that he and Meat put on when they thought that he was the number one most popular superhero.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's still got that rhythm in him. And, you know, he briefly puts on a ballet outfit a little bit later when he's doing some poses. So he's got some real dancing spirit today.
Oh, yeah. When he was doing those poses, I'm getting ahead of us here a little bit, but he decides which pose is going to look the coolest, and everything is either completely ridiculous and makes him look foolish again, or is like a parody of the Incredible Hulk, or some other such similar thing.
He's in high spirits, you know, he's doing the quick costume changes along with the poses and having himself a grand old time. Meanwhile, they are stalked by the Rocky Monster, Iwao, who, speaking of stocks, talks about his stock rising and Kinnikuman's stock falling if he beats Kinnikuman in battle in front of the reporter. We'll find that as time goes on, this is a character who uses a lot of financial terms in his day-to-day speak. That's, in addition to being rocky and kind of pathetic, talking in money terms is something that Iwao does. You'll see that in his Kinnikuman muscle shot graphics, he's portrayed in a variety of different medals and lounging atop piles of gold coins and bejeweled and bedazzled cups and so forth.
Now, were we supposed to have seen him before? I get the impression that he was referencing to some past events, and my thought went immediately to, well, he probably appeared in the manga, and because, as we've talked about, the cartoon series is compressed, that maybe we're missing something here.
That is indeed the case. When he first talks to Kinnikuman, he says, "Remember me," and Kinnikuman asks him, "Isn't this your first appearance in this show?" And that's an in-joke for manga readers who did, in fact, see Kinnikuman beat him in episode 11, which is some gosh darn Kinnikuman goes to the zoo and fights a guy in a panda suit, and then this big rock monster is hanging out, and everyone's ignoring him because he sucks, and then Kinnikuman beats him up just because of it, and so forth. Yeah, so that's a thing that happened, but he's getting a fresh start. He's getting a second opportunity to make a first impression, and boy does he blow it. But before he gets a chance to blow it, here comes Capitron, our kaiju of the week. This guy is a fan submitted monster. Around issue 14, these start becoming more common. The first fan-submitted monster, Daibatsura, is kind of an underwater pervert who captures women to look at their bikini area. And then after that, there in chapter 15, there's the fan... That was a fan-submitted monster. And then in chapter 15, there's the fan-submitted vampire monster, Dai King. Here in chapter 16 of the manga, we've got Capitron, and then chapter 18 as a fan submission is where you get the first appearance of Kinkotsuman in the manga. Here, however, Kinkotsuman is Iwao's boss and has been pulling the strings behind most of the kaiju attacks all along.
So it sounds like there might not always be a strong filter on the fan-submitted monsters. Not that Capitron is particularly objectionable, but to go off on a bit of a tangent, some of the other things you mentioned do raise my eyebrows a little bit. It kind of makes me think of, and this could be a tangent that we just want to cut, it kind of makes me think of reading that at one point Chris Chan got a letter published in, I believe, a Shonen magazine. Or maybe it was a Shoujo magazine, whichever one it was, kind of spoke to the need to maybe not just publish anything and everything that somebody sends in, because it was kind of uncomfortable. Likewise, the bikini pervert monster, even with it being the 80s, that's a little bit off.
It's a little bit off. It's a little bit off, and, you know, as time goes on, we will continue to catalog these fan-submitted monsters, including which ones do and do not make it into the show versus the manga. One of my favorites, though, Sneegator, who is he's half alligator, half shoe. That's a fan creation, and I feel like that right there... You know, whatever small child came up with the sneaker alligator justifies a whole lot of the process, but editorial control is still necessary.
Yeah, the highest of the highs and the lowest of the lows. And that's kind of what we're going to get here, because Capitron shows up, and this is where Kinnikuman goes into his different poses, all of which seem to be either some sort of absurd clownish caricature or ripping off the Incredible Hulk, and spends so long goofing around and doing this that Terryman comes in and shoots the monster while he's goofing around and not accomplishing anything, and raises a very good point that since the monster is actively causing destruction and mayhem, maybe you should just focus on defeating the monster so that it stops it from causing even more trouble for people.
And of course, Natsuko photographs Terryman as he defeats the monster, continues to photograph him as he poses while saying this, and then comments, "Wow, he even says cool things." So she is quite taken with Terryman and his saving of the day and his no-nonsense attitude.
No lies detected.
What's interesting is that in the manga, Kinnikuman doesn't do the whole pose thing. He's on his way to fight the monster, and Terryman just flies past him and says, "Out of my way, I got this," blows up the monster, and then flies up to Natsuko and says, "Hey, you don't want to interview Kinnikuman, interview me, a real hero." So he's actually much more antagonistic and has a less clear claim on superior heroism in the manga. It's not until the next chapter of the manga, number 17, where he and Kinnikuman become a tag team for the first time against Sheik Seijin and Abdo Dula, that Terryman really drops the antagonistic behavior towards Kinnikuman. However, here in the cartoon, the Yamato spirit is enough that he's not outwardly antagonistic towards Kinnikuman here, and it's more that he just has a better way of being a hero that puts him on top.
He's no longer charging money on the spot either.
That's true, too, because that was definitely a reason he had for letting monsters get away with some stuff in the past. You know, he would wait for payment in some cases before he would work, whereas now he seems to prioritize the well-being of the citizenry. So, good for Terryman.
And Kinnikuman doesn't acquit himself particularly favorably in what comes next. We get this situation where he's going to be throwing a tantrum, calling Flying Natsuko a slut, and then thinking that because he's upset her, she's going to come running, crying into his arms. It was all very offensive and uncomfortable, and I wish this wasn't here, but it was. So that was part of this episode, unfortunately.
And instead of running, crying into his arms, she jumps, kicking into his face, which is the only appropriate reaction in such a scenario.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, Kinnikuman doesn't really have time for the lesson to set in as Iwao shows up and grabs Natsuko, and now they have a money pun as Kinnikuman asks him, "How's it going?" But as our faithful translators in the Hokuto no Gun crew explain, this, in the Kansai dialect, has the dual meaning of "how's business," and Iwao complains that Kinkotsuman hasn't been giving him any pocket money.
That was a nice touch, you know, I like that.
That was a joke that came across a little bit better than when Kinnikuman gets Capitron's name wrong and calls him Kamehameha. 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 And Capitron protests that he's a kappa, and Kinnikuman says, "Well, a kappa is a kame," which is playing on the fact that the kappa demon in Japanese mythology looks like a turtle, and then in Japanese, kappa and kame, at least the words for the demon and the turtle sound alike, but in English, kappa is turtle doesn't really work as a great pun, but they tried.
They try. It's part of the language barrier, and I at least picked up enough to know that there was a pun there that I wasn't getting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Iwao tells Iwao tells Natsuko that pictures of him beating up Kinnikuman would be worth some money. She says that she's not going to pay. He says, "Give me 10,000 yen. She counters with 5,000. He dumbs himself out of position and counteroffers with 3,000. And then Kinnikuman and Meat get into the bidding, driving it down to 1,000. And eventually, Iwao finds himself bidding 100 yen for a picture of himself beating up Kinnikuman. And so he springs into action and finds that Kinnikuman is indeed a tougher opponent than he realized.
I think this may be one of the first times that we've seen Kinnikuman just beat somebody, and that he's stronger than his opponent here. Most of the time, it's sort of the opposite of that.
Yeah, the really only notable thing about Iwao's offense is that he's got kind of an anteater, come at me, bro, arms wide stance before he locks up with Kinnikuman. And, you know, that's a stylistic choice that I don't mind. But after you're locking up with Kinnikuman and tussling with him for a bit, he finds himself radically outclassed. He gets swung around in the air by his tail. He gets elbow dropped. He gets figure four leg locked. And in the end, Kinnikuman has kind of this weird supine grip, almost full Nelson, that he picks Iwao up in. He calls it the rock drop. He picks him up in this almost full Nelson with a supine grip and then drops his hands around to the waist into the German suplex grip and gives him the nice bridging German suplex, which we have done a little bit of research in, and now believe, well, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but I now believe that the iconic German suplex in Japanese culture that gets referred to in imagery may have begun with Karl Gotch versus Michiaki Yoshimura in the JWA on May 1st of 1961, Gotch's first match in Japan, and a darn good time for the German suplex to get introduced to the national consciousness.
You very well may be right about that. I haven't looked into that in particular, but I'd be interested in doing it soon.
Might be interesting to pull the Wrestling Observer Newsletter obituary of Karl Gotch. Maybe there's something mentioned in there, since he's the German suplex master.
Hmm. Maybe I shall. I'll look at that.
Mm-hmm. Well, fans, we'll let you know if anything comes of that. Speaking of things coming of things, Natsuko proposes a new title for her article, Artist of Muscle, Kinnikuman's Dance of Destruction. So, in scene 3, there's a big lineup at the magazine stand to buy the Weekly Hero magazine. Kinnikuman is there, and he gets in on the action. Scene 4. Natsuko comes to the house bearing gifts. Kinnikuman and Meat are angry at her. Why is there no feature? Well, she explains, the film was stolen. But then why is there a feature on Terryman? Well, she explains, only the film of Kinnikuman's victory was stolen. Kinnikuman then does the old open up the cupboard and a whole bunch of magazines pour out gimmick, and reveals that he spent all his Gyudon money on this week's issue of Weekly Hero magazine. He chases Natsuko out into the yard, yelling, "Take responsibility, I want Gyudon." And Iwao has a good old chuckle that he managed to cost Kinnikuman some money and holds up the film canister that he stole from Natsuko's camera, saying, "That's what you get for hurting me," as he's all bandaged up and on crutches.
Oh, it was a really silly conclusion. You know, where do you go with this? Natsuko is approaching with the gifts, not thinking that maybe he would have been a little upset with that. Why was he keeping magazines in his refrigerator in a way that they would all come spilling out when the door was opened? And when was there an opportunity for the film to get stolen anyway? All these questions, you know, don't have any answers, but it's a cartoon. You know, it's all in the name of comedy and fun. Just really a silly turn of events here.
Absolutely. So here we have an example of Kinnikuman being serious, getting into a fight he can win, impressing someone, but in the end his reputation doesn't improve because of events beyond his control. And he spends the end of the episode lamenting that the world could be so cruel and calling out for his mother. And then we have a weird parody of a miso soup commercial where a giant talking, the sun is setting and the sun has a face and it talks. And the sun tells Kinnikuman, "For all your miso needs, buy Hagemaruki Okasan. That's a brand of miso soup," which I'm sure is hilarious if you've seen the original commercial. All right. Anything else to say about episode 4A, or shall we move on to 4B?
Let's keep moving ahead. I think that covered it pretty nicely.
All right, so now we have episode 4B, Part-Time Work is Tough, manga episode number 8, compared to Flying Natsuko's manga episode number 16, so you can see that this one didn't immediately follow the preceding chapter in the comic. However, I'd say that the transition from one to the next is pretty fluid, as Kinnikuman ends one half episode chasing Natsuko, complaining about spending all his Gyudon money, and begins the next episode wandering the streets hungry with Meat, looking for something to eat.
Yeah, that makes a certain amount of sense. Really, there's been enough of a running theme of Kinnikuman being unsuccessful and poor and bad with money and just having poor judgment in general, that this could go in pretty much anywhere, but it does fit on nicely at the end of the previous episode.
Absolutely. And so Kaneko-man is so desperate that he even gets down on his hands and knees beneath Yosaku-san as Yosaku is trying to enjoy a nice bowl of ramen in order to catch the drips from his bowl, which is quite gross to me.
This episode has quite a lot of sort of gross scatological humor, starting with this, and it's going to be a thing throughout the episode, so strap in, because it gets worse from here.
Yes, indeed, and so they head on over to the park, where they gorge on water, and Kaneko-man's body fills up grotesquely with water balloon muscles that sag and slorp and make a kind of unwholesome water jiggling sound when he moves. I don't approve, but they find on the bench that they are resting on a magazine with help wanted ads, and although Kaneko-man initially needs some convincing, declaring that a hero such as himself is above part-time work, he sees an ad to work in a gyudon restaurant and is immediately taken with the opportunity, and so finds himself working there in the next scene. So we find ourselves in a gyudon restaurant, which is notably not Yosaku's gyudon restaurant that we have been seeing up until now in the series. It's a new one, and the owner has curly hair and a ring through his nose. He's got the old septum piercing ring gimmick, so there's that. And a boxer comes in and orders a half-size bowl, but Kaneko-man laughs at that ridiculous idea and insists that the man must want a large, feeds him a large. The boxer begins to tuck in gratefully, then becomes angry and declares that Kaneko-man has spoiled his diet and walks out.
It's another one of those situations where it's not just superheroing. Kaneko-man really can't do anything right. I feel like this is a pretty common theme among cartoons in general, that they will often give their characters part-time jobs for an episode to put them out of their element and show them doing their foibles in a different setting. That's what this is for Kaneko-man, and yeah, he's not going to be particularly successful in this or his other jobs, because he is who he is.
Indeed, and his boss even catches him reading a later episode of the Kaneko-man manga while he's at work. It's going to be the first fight between him and Stakasa King that he's reading, so when we get to that in the show, we can have caught up to what he was reading at this point. So really, he should know everything that happens to him going forward, since he apparently has access to issues of his own comic that are contemporary with the release of the show, which is, you know, here in 1983, so we're in year 4 of the written material.
I didn't actually catch that that's what he was reading specifically, but that is good to know.
Absolutely. And so his next customer comes in, and it's one Adaran's Nakano, who orders Saranami, and then we get another one of these Japanese puns that doesn't quite translate in a way that we could enjoy. Kaneko-man mistakes him as for having saying Sazanami, which is a ripple on the water, and so he gets a big basket full of rice and waves that back and forth in front of the customer. But then his boss shows up to clarify that Saranami is just beef without the rice bed beneath it. And so Kaneko-man becomes angry at Nakano for his complicated order. They yell back and forth. They get into a fight that trashes the restaurant. And then the boss, with the ring through his nose, transforms halfway into a bull and starts hoofing at the ground like he wants to run over Kaneko-man. And Kaneko-man is waving a cloth, trying to divert his attention elsewhere.
And we don't really see what the outcome of that is, but he gets fired.
He gets fired and comes crying to meet at a restaurant called Restaurant.
It's descriptive.
And so Meat tells Kaneko-man he can't be responsible for him all the time. And Kaneko-man reacts to this by being stabbed in the chest in a kind of visual imagery reflecting what he's feeling inside gag. And he's very sad, but he takes off to work his new job as a night guard He takes off to work his new job as a night security guard at a department store.
Yeah, he does. And he is going to get up to a little bit of light mischief here. He gets into a fight with some sort of baby doll of some description, and then also an inflatable Ultraman standee. But
Kewpie doll, in fact.
Kewpie doll. Okay, that's what that was. Right. I referenced that in the episode, and I had just completely forgotten about it. But he gets into a fight with a Kewpie doll and an inflatable Ultraman standee, which isn't going too horribly awry so far. But the intruders to the department store that are going to be coming next are, to me, their first appearance is part of the best part of the episode.
They are funny little one-shot characters. A pair of aliens, both of them small, one of them slightly taller than the other, come down in a hamburger-shaped spaceship. They declare that they are there to study humanity, and they're going to start with the center of human culture, the department store. And, you know, I try not to lapse too much into millennial nostalgia, but malls were kind of cool for their time. And department stores.
They were. It was a neat thing that happened for a while it was a thing that was happening for a while. But to me, the neat thing, they come down in this hamburger-shaped UFO. Already, that's kind of just off the wall and kind of a funny sight gag. One of them announces that this UFO used to be a hamburger, and in fact, you can still eat it. And then he tries and fails by taking a bite out of it and breaking his teeth, and then says, well, just not right now. And I have no idea what that's supposed to mean, if there is any deeper meaning to it. But it's completely ridiculous, and I like
it. It's my favorite gag of the episode as well, and it is because I don't understand what it's referencing or what it could be other than a complete goofy non sequitur. But I love it for being silly and for being a good bit of nonsense indeed. So that is definitely the highlight of the aliens' appearance. The low light comes when they go into the store, discover Kaneko Man on his cot sleeping. No, wait a minute. They go into the store and discover Kaneko Man on a bed sleeping and decide that they need to take him in and probe him. They have some discussion over what he might be, whether he's a dog or a cat or an Ultraman. And as one of them is eye level with his butt, he farts in its face.
Yeah, that's... there's a lot of fart humor in this series, and it's just... It's not my thing. But that is definitely what happens.
Well, I'll tell you what is my thing, is that after talking back and forth briefly, Kaneko Man introduces himself as the hero who is powered by garlic, and the aliens declare that they've never heard of him and that he looks weak and might be the first person that they can beat in a fight, so they attack him, and they then proceed to fight with all of the toys in the toy store, including the aliens chasing Kaneko Man with a big stuffed Frankenstein monster, Kaneko Man fighting back by shooting at them with a ray gun, them throwing darts at Kaneko Man. In the manga, Kaneko Man actually defeats them by throwing Play-Doh at them, and they decide that that's too silly and they go home. Here, however, they knock him into a Space Invaders arcade cabinet, which was 1978, so this is about 5 years into the reign of Space Invaders as a popular arcade game, so it's still... You know, this isn't a retro gaming joke. This is still very much a current arcade game by the standards of the time. And Kaneko Man becomes so engrossed with it and then celebrates his victory over the Space Invaders, causing the actual Space Invaders to decide that, much like the space monsters in Episode 3, that Kaneko Man is not worth the trouble and they go home.
But unfortunately, he's not going to keep his job.
He's not going to keep his job, and he's responsible for the damages. So in the next scene, we find Kaneko Man at some kind of construction site, digging in the ground with a pick. And he explains to his co-worker, Yosaku-san, that he got a job to make money, but he only made debt.
Yeah, he's reduced to digging around in the dirt with farm implements. Not to leave a man without his pick. But he has his sob story here, and of course we're going to end the episode when a bird poops on his head.
Yep, a bird flies by, squawking out, idiot, moron, clumsy, and poops on his head. So Kiriku-man, who had a chance at glory at the first half of the episode, ends with getting literally pooped on. So we might here be closing in on the nadir of Kiriku-man's popularity and success. He's the number one worst-ranked hero in the world, and he's getting pooped on while deep in debt.
Yeah, from slurping up the sauce from someone else's ramen bowl to farts to bird poop, this episode has it all.
Well, you slurp 16 sauce, what do you get? Another bird pooping on you and deeper in debt. Well then, let's now talk about next episode, in which Kiriku-man will finally face off against his rival Kinkotsu-man in the long-awaited fight that, for readers of the manga, is just a one-shot Monster of the Week encounter, whereas for watchers of the cartoon has been a long-awaited encounter between two rivals, as Kinkotsu-man has sent wave after wave of ineffectual underlings at Kiriku-man in preparation for their long-awaited fight. Are you hyped up, Punch?
You know, not really. Kinkotsu-man, all he seems to do is a couple of times appear before whatever monster shows up, and you get the impression from other monsters having shown up without him or only referencing him casually that really he hasn't done much yet. And he's kind of just this skinny, long-haired skeleton. You know, he looks kind of like Tom Guycott from Clash at Demon Head. He looks like Tom Guycott from Flash at Demon Head, the Wish.com version. But considering how low we've portrayed Kiriku-man in this as well, maybe they're a good match for each other.
Yeah, indeed. It's definitely two guys facing off for the Jobberweight title. But I appreciate that, at least in the cartoon, when the Monsters of the Week show up, they tie themselves back to Kinkotsu-man with a brief verbal acknowledgement so that at least his name continues to show up in the series to keep awareness of him. But you're right that he really hasn't done anything yet and won't do anything until the next episode, but hey, that's what we're in for. So tune in next time to the Super Muscle Cast when we see Kinkotsu-man do something for the first time.
We're going to get this show on the road here. We've had our first few Monster of the Week episodes. We've got some continuity going right now, but I think it's about time to kick it into gear a little bit and kind of get this story off the ground. We know what we're dealing with now.
All right. And I believe that concludes the Muscle Cast for this week. Rock on, Punch King.
Rock on. I'll be back next time for Kiriku-man versus Kinkotsu-man. Let's get this show on the road. We're getting started now.
I like that the last thing people will hear before the ending music is we're getting started now.
Yep. Hachame Jason wa superhero. Onikku no teire fine no renshu. Karate chop de hashi o wattara kyu.